Welcome back to A Fresh Story, the podcast where we have conversations about brave decisions to start over again. I'm Jenny.
And I'm Olivia. And today we're talking to my little sister, Genevieve, Jenny, Fresh Start COO and my biggest life supporter. She is... has many Fresh Starts, but she's here. She's gonna talk about her big breakup, her life breakup there that ultimately put her on the path where she's supposed to be. It's nice to meet you, Jenny.
It's nice to meet you too. It's great to be here. I'm glad that you and I put together this podcast so I could be here.
Glad you could stop on the media tour.
Exactly. By the way, I love a media tour. I guess I'll take us back to the beginning. So when I was in college, I studied Russian, and the department was quite small and pretty intimate. And we were having a party one night, and a friend brought a friend to a party, and I met this gentleman, my ex, there. We did not reconnect until two or three years later, when he asked me out on Facebook. Facebook has been a very motivating force in my life.
Yeah.
Yep. He asked me out on Facebook, and we went out. And the thing about being with him from the beginning was that it was always very, like, clear what we were doing. We were dating. And then I thought he was incredibly romantic because he got down on one knee in a Starbucks and asked me to be his girlfriend. It would be another decade him down on one knee. Yep.
Yeah, and cringy.
It was cringy, but it was so, he hates that story, but it was sweet. You know, I thought it was very romantic and very exciting.
Well,
and
he is the silly personality.
Yeah, like, and I love cheesy. I love it. I love romance. I'm a very romantic person, in every way, with myself, with my friends. And so it was always very clear what we were doing. I felt. But I was really young and he was really young. I was 23 when we started dating. And he had really big ideas of what he wanted his life to be like. And I think that's wonderful. It started causing tension at a certain point, right? Because he wanted to do these really big things. And being the way that I am, I'm a very much like a every day should be joyful and adventurous kind of person. And I think when I had a Hinge for a short period of time, one of my prompts was don't swipe right on me if you need to get in an airplane to have an adventure, because I went to get a sandwich today and it was an adventure. You know, I can find adventure anywhere. And so we were together for maybe 4 years before we moved in together. And it's funny now because I think, wow, we were only together for 4 years before we moved in together. At the time, I was livid. I felt so old at 27, just moving in with somebody. I felt ancient. I felt like I was about to dry up and die. Like, I felt so old. So we moved in together when I was 26 and he was 28 or 29. And we both had jobs in the city, and we sort of did the whole New York City young couple thing. Yeah. You know, we moved into Astoria and it was a really sweet little apartment. And I knew it was, again, like you say, your superpower is your intuition. I am very intuitive as well. Like, I know when things are the right move for me. And we walked into that apartment and it was like to the bones. Like, there was no walls. There was no toilet. There was no sinks or bathtubs or anything. And we walked in and I said, this is our home. And I was right. It was exactly where I was supposed to be for 6 years. And I lived, and so we moved in together and we just could never get on the same page. You know, he would say, but we're in the same chapters. It's okay. And I was like, but we're not on the same page. And I wanted to, we were different. We were different in a lot of ways. I'm a very expressive person. I've written poetry in the past. I write poetry now. I'm very artistic in that way, creative, romantic soul. And God bless him. It's not him, you know? And so there was a lot of things that I felt I wasn't getting in that relationship, validation, love, words, affirmations, that I thought, if I could just get him on that one knee in a Starbucks again, you know, once he gets on that one knee, I'll feel it. He'll say the things I need him to say.
And I do think he really loved you. Like, I do think that, like, because I knew him very well also. Mm-hmm. We spent a lot of time together. I do think that he loved you. I just think that he didn't love you in the way you needed to be loved
100%. At all. And I think that it's a very important lesson. Like, it doesn't need to be bad for it not to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't bad. And that was the thing.
It doesn't need to be bad for it to be good. Yeah.
For not to be good. It, like, I spent so much time looking at, not intentionally, but sort of taking in information from the outside world unintentionally, like couples that go to bed together last longer. Okay, so we have to go to bed together. That's good. We always go to bed together. That's good. We'll keep doing that. And, you know, no person should be 100% of your life. You can't rely on your partner 100% of the time. Well, that's true, but you're supposed to rely on your partner like 85% for like 85% of your conversation. It was more like a 15 to him, and then 85 got distributed over my girlfriends and my sister.
Well, you outsourced. I outsourced
everything. Yeah, everything.
Your emotional
yes. stuff. So I say this because I really wanted to marry him, and it was the first time I'd ever really wanted to get married. I had grown up being like, I never want to get married. I just want to be with somebody, and that's enough. And like, I want the love to be the thing and not the marriage license. And then I was with him for a couple of years, and suddenly I needed to get married. I really needed to get married. And I pushed the issue a lot, and I talked about it a lot. And we would have these massive blowups where I'd be like, what are you doing? You know?
And the undercurrent here too is you were a wedding officiant for.
I was a wedding officiant. Yep, I was marrying people, and it was. I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed mm-hmm. that I couldn't get my guy to like, you know, what's so great about that girl that she's getting married, and I'm not worth it. I'm not worthy. I'm not lovable. There was a lot of validation that I was looking for from that. So he bought the ring, in 2017. And then he had the ring for 2 years, and I found it, and I told him, because good couples don't keep secrets from each other. You know, we were good. We fought, but we fought really fair. We didn't call names. We weren't mean. He never scared me. Never once was I scared in that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That's good, right? Well, it's not, it doesn't have to be bad for it to be good, for it not to be good. Right. So he never scared me. He was always really calm, especially in arguments. But he also never really knew what to do with me when I was upset. He just had no idea how to solve it. But don't worry, because my sister did. Mm-hmm. You know, I could run to Olivia and she could sort of fix it. There were times that he and I had arguments that I would meet up with my brother afterwards to calm down.
Yeah. I would say it was like once a year, there was like a big thing. And it was like
the once a year, there was a big thing. Yeah. In the last 3 years, I'd say there was a once a year big thing. Like, do we stay?
And it was devastating. And I was, because I know, because you felt like you'd put a lot of time into this.
I loved our story. And I loved that we had built a life together. You know, we both had no money when we started dating, no money, like laughable amounts of money. I don't even know. I think I was in my first job post college. And I would look around at our home, and we had bought everything that was there together. And we had gotten into that apartment together. And I loved that. And I loved that maybe he wasn't going to marry me super young, but like when we got to 50, we would have spent half our lives together. I loved that. I was really excited by that. And he was really funny and really kind. He is really funny and really kind. He still lives. He was a lot of really lovely things. He just wasn't right for me in a lot of ways. And that was really hard to see, because when we started dating at 23, again, who am I? I was an embryo, basically. So he finally asked me to marry him on a beach, on a private island that we were on with my dad in late March 2019, 2 weeks before Olivia got divorced, or Olivia's marriage ended. And it was a very funny proposal. it still wasn't everything I needed it to be. And I was like, uh-oh, I'm going to have to walk through the rest of my life knowing that this proposal isn't what I needed. And still walking around being like, but do you love me? Do you want to spend the rest of your life with me? Still sort of begging these questions.
Did you feel unworthy that he was carrying a ring around for 2 years? Like mm-hmm. that there was something wrong with you?
All the time. Mm-hmm. All the time. I thought it was my weight. Mm-hmm. I thought it was my weight. And I'm still not sure it wasn't my weight.
You were very thin for some of that time, by the way.
I mean, it should never be your weight that stops.
No, of course, but I just want to clarify. You were in great shape. Yeah. You were running.
Yeah, I was running half marathons. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was my, like, I really did. Because I couldn't figure out any other reason. I did everything. I did all of the, I did everything. I did the laundry, the made dinners. I made sure the rent was paid.
The emotional labor of
the emotional labor, then right. I was great with his parents and all of these things. So I felt incredibly unworthy and I felt unlovable. And I felt like I didn't understand. This is not the first time I've been in that situation, in a similar situation. And I couldn't understand why I'd gotten myself in that situation again. I felt stupid. I felt really stupid. And I felt really foolish. And I felt really embarrassed because my friends were getting married around me. And not that it was a competition, but it was like, why did they find somebody that was able to love them? And why am I always finding somebody that seems to not be able to love me? And I felt incredibly unworthy. And I couldn't understand why he would do that to me and why he would make me feel like that. So we got engaged and I was very excited because he proposed to me when I was wearing a bikini. And I was like, well, it must be thin enough. So I don't know if that's the case at all.
Yeah.
I think he just thought it was a funny story.
That's interesting.
So we came back to New York and we planned an engagement party and it was very exciting for me, but I still, and he was involved in the wedding process. Like it's so complicated, right? People are so nuanced. He was involved in the wedding process, but then like also kind of wasn't. And like, also it just felt like something that I was producing. And I sort of got the feeling of like, well, if this is how it feels when I'm having a wedding and it feels like I have to make these concessions to him so it feels like he wants to come to our wedding, like what's it gonna be like making it a
little, and he was making it a little difficult. I mean, from an outsider's perspective, as helping you plan your wedding, there were things that he requested kind of that we were like, that's not
like a fire is what you're talking about. I mean, just generally, like it wasn't something like lascivious. It was just like,
there was like picky things that he wanted that for somebody that wasn't really helping plan.
Well, there was another friend of ours who was getting married in a remote location the weekend before. And I was nervous that he wouldn't understand why he couldn't go to that. Right. And actually he did, to his credit. He was like, no, I can't go to that. It's the weekend before our wedding. But I was like, oh, he's not going to understand. And then he's going to be mad at me.
But it's interesting that you talk about your intuition because you do have a strong intuition, but I tend to not think about your intuition a lot. That's your older sister. But you kind of kept saying, like, I don't think this is going to happen. Like, I don't believe this is really going to happen.
Yeah. I couldn't see it. And I have like a pretty good sense of when I can see things and when I can't see things, and I couldn't see it. I just couldn't see it. So then COVID hit.
Well, I threw you a bridal shower. A bridal shower.
We had a what should have been a lovely engagement party, which was complicated because of other reasons that were not related to my ex. And I had a beautiful bridal shower. The weekend before COVID hit, like the weekend before lockdown. It was March 8th or 9th. Beautiful. And I'm so glad I had that. I had all the women in my life surrounding me it was such a beautiful event. And then COVID hit. I basically had to end my career because I had been working in live events. And the part that I loved about live events was the live part, not the pre-show at home part. Sorry. And we were home, and so we had to cancel the wedding. Our wedding was set for May 2016. May 16th, 2020. And Olivia called me and very gently said, I think that maybe you have to think about canceling the wedding. And I screamed. I like went full bridezilla, and I was like, this is the thing that was supposed to be about me. Let's subtext that. He was finally going to say the things I needed to hear.
I don't even think I said cancel. I think what I said was, I think you need to get in touch with them and book for a future date.
Because that is what you said. That is what you said.
People and so are going to be booking.
Right. No, you were 100% right.
You said
get ahead of all the other brides and make sure that you get a date on the schedule sooner. You're absolutely right. And so we ended up in the next year, we ended up rescheduling and canceling two more times. One second. And by the time it got to March 2021, which was our 10-year anniversary, he and I had been together for 10 years in March 2021. I think I just said, I'm over it. I don't care. We'll get married when we get married. Let's just have a baby. And I was like, I'm about to be so old at 33 years old.
Right.
34 years old. I was 33 already. I was like, I'm going to be so old. Let's just have a baby.
And that's something you wanted for a long time.
That was something that I wanted for a long time. And that was something that I had built a lot of my identity around at that time. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I had asked him on the first date if he wanted to have kids, because I don't play games and I'm not passive aggressive. And I want to be very clear that I wasn't going to get involved with somebody that wasn't interested in having kids relatively young. Mm-hmm. And I'd already been with him for 10 years and mm-hmm. I'd already been watching, it's funny when you live in New York City, people aren't really having kids yet. Like my friends are still just starting to do that. I'm at 35. But I was like, I was concerned about what the world thought of me. What must they think? And by the way, it wasn't passive. People were saying to me, when are you going to have kids? Yeah. Why hasn't he married you yet? Yeah. Does he love you? People were aggressive.
There were people that accosted you about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And not out of love.
No.
So and I checked in with him a few times, over the years. I would say, if you need help with the engagement, let me know, because we were very close, he and I.
And he was, and I would have these little check-ins with him throughout the years to make sure he was really in it. Like when Olivia's oldest was born, I said, if you want to be his uncle, you kind of have to be his uncle, even though we're not married, you have to be his uncle from the start. Otherwise you're never going to be his uncle. The uncle X conversation. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm in. So I thought, okay, that's as good to me as a proposal as far as I'm concerned. Right, and I'm reaching at straws here. I'm grabbing at straws. So we had this conversation. I went back to Christine and had the conversation with her about, the babies and whatever, and broached it with him. And he said we figured out a timeline. I figured out a timeline and he mm-hmm. agreed. He agreed by, I think, the weakest yes anybody's ever yesed a consent to. And they say an enthusiastic consent. Right. It was not enthusiastic consent.
Right.
And then we just had a conversation one Wednesday in June. There was three Wednesdays in June. One Wednesday we talked about having kids. One Wednesday we had a big argument. And the next Wednesday we were broken up. Mm-hmm. And it was the 2nd, the 9th, and the 16th. And I know that. Mm-hmm. And we just sat down one day. Well, here's what happened. I came back with takeout, and we had been sort of having these tougher conversations. And like I said, we were good at these. We'd gotten better at these, throughout the years. We were good arguers, we were good at having these conversations. And I came back and we were going to watch Loki. And I went into the bedroom to take out my contacts, and I took out my contacts, and the second they were out, I just started crying. And I fell on the bed, and I came back into the room, and he was like, "What's wrong?" And I said, "We need to figure this out." And he said, "Let's not talk about it. Let's watch the show." And I said, "No, I can't keep not talking about it." And we just sat down and he said the things that I needed to hear that released me. And I'm mm-hmm. thankful for him mm-hmm. for that, because mm-hmm. I would have kept working on it. I had made calls to couples therapists and we hadn't gone because he apologized enough. We fixed it mm-hmm. enough. I had, you know, we had gotten to that point about a year previous where we had almost ended things, and we weren't mm-hmm. like that. We weren't a dramatic couple in any capacity. We were very steady. And, but he recanted enough, you know, he took it back enough. And I was not ready to leave, like point blank. I was not ready to leave. And so we had a discussion, and he said something like, you know, our lives, it's going to be fine. And I said, well, you know, it's got to be better than fine, because if we're going to leave each other after 10 years together and 10 years of partnership, and you're the nephew to my uncles, and he was at other that
way.
Time.
Other way. Uncle to my nephews.
You're the nephew to my uncles and the uncle mm-hmm. to my nephews. Yeah.
We're not that kind of family.
We're not that kind of Well, also, it doesn't matter, but that's really funny. Mm-hmm. You know, you're the uncle to my nephews, and yeah. that was really important to me also because mm-hmm. their dad had left mm-hmm. and I didn't want to take away another male figure in their life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I said, if we're going to give all of that up, it's got to be better than fine. It's got to be great. Our lives have to be great. You and I have to pursue the lives that we want, because otherwise we can just stay. If we're not going to go pursue so much joy, we can just stay here in Queens and be like 60% happy for the rest of our lives. And maybe when I'm 45, you'll finally be ready to have a baby, you know? And so I started packing my stuff that night. Mm-hmm. Incidentally, my father was putting his cat down the next morning. Our father was putting his cat down the next morning and was going to be burying it at our mother's house. And that does tell you something about our parents' divorce. And so I knew that my dad would be coming. I had a car in Queens at the time, my car. I knew that my dad would be coming to Queens the next day, and I knew that he could drive my car, which is funny because it all comes together. And that's not why we had the conversation, but it all comes together. So I knew that I didn't have to drive my car mm-hmm. having just gone through a breakup by myself.
Right.
I also knew if I didn't get out that day, I wasn't going to get out. Mm-hmm. Because I just knew that I didn't have the strength to, I knew that I was really capable of being like, yeah, he doesn't mean it. We'll figure it out. He's going to grow up. Just it's going to be fine. We'll just watch Loki and eat the takeout. Mm-hmm. And like, mm-hmm. it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
I've never watched Loki. I'll never watch it now, but, I think he watched it. He told me he watched it, but so I packed up my stuff and then, I texted you.
Well, I think you texted me. The text went like, going to get takeout. Mm-hmm. And then the next text was like, I think we're breaking up. And then I was like, what?
Yeah.
And you were like, yep, it's fine. I'm fine. And then I was like, and then I called Dad and I was like, you better call Jenny because you might need, I thought, I didn't know the level of emotions.
Yeah, it's
so
hard
I thought
to know.
Maybe he would need to go get you that night. Yeah. Like, I didn't know. So, you know, then he called you and then, you know, you came out the next day with him.
Yep. So it was my car with a trunk full of stuff, my father, me, our brother's amazing girlfriend, Bridget, and the corpse of my father and my brother's cat. Moved out.
Elvis.
Elvis has left the building. Exactly. and I left and I moved into my mom's temporarily, her temporary roost. Mm-hmm. And I found an apartment in the area, which was insanely expensive. But I loved it. I loved that house. Yeah. It was the first floor of a house from the 1800s and it was beautiful.
Where most of our pictures are.
That's where most of our photos are from. And I lived there for a year mm-hmm. and it was exactly what I needed. My ex came, you know, it's funny, like when you're with somebody for 10 years, from 23 to 33, I did all of my growing alongside him. I wouldn't even say with him at this point. It was like parallel play, like more than anything. But he did come out and visit the house before I moved into it when I had the keys. And he kind of like, you know, he was very thoughtful. And I think that like, it's also not the first time this has happened to be that in losing me, suddenly everybody, you know, these men are very fascinated by me again. I've seen,
you're so the new shiny object again,
right? They can't have me.
Yeah,
I'm sure he'll listen to this and have lots to say, in which case do not text me about it. I don't want to hear it. And so I've seen him twice since then, but it was different. You know, I left everything in that apartment.
Mm-hmm.
I only took my clothes, whatever was my grandmother's that I had taken from her place, which I'm wondering now if I left stuff that was like smaller stuff that was hers. I had this feeling that I didn't want to break up his home, which is insane because even though maybe I was the one that took off my ring, he was the one that said the things that ended the relationship, and I didn't mm-hmm. want to interrupt his home. I had done all custom spice bottles. I left those all there. All of our kitchen utensils, all of our pans, our Instant Pot, our $300 rice cooker. I left everything, and I mm-hmm. moved out into this house with furniture, a single bedside table that was a metal bedside table, and my grandmother's like antique wooden bread.
You had no furniture.
I had no furniture. No, and said, I had
I wanted to clarify that you had no furniture.
I had one little bedside table. That's right. All I had. That now is right. In your room. And I had to furnish a house, and it was really overwhelming. And I had mm-hmm. friends that offered to come break down boxes for me. And I had friends that offered to come build furniture for me. Nobody knew what to do, and everybody wanted to help. Mm-hmm. It was so kind, but it was overwhelming. I spent a lot of money mm-hmm. furnishing that house mm-hmm. and I expected to
but
be there.
But you
for
needed
more...
it. You know,
I 100% needed it. I expected to be there right. for more than a year. Circumstances changed. But I was able to finally, like, I always wanted a brass bed, and my mm-hmm. ex, who has now said, I didn't understand the vision and you were absolutely right. It was beautiful. I never wanted to, he was like, would look like a hospital room, and I wanted that brass bed. And when I couldn't find the brass bed, I bought a bed and I spray painted it. Like, I wanted things the way that I wanted them. And it was the first time in my life where mm-hmm. I had the confluence of time, space, money, and energy to get the things that I wanted. And I had that house looking exactly like I wanted yeah. it to. And I loved it. I loved living there. It was I called it the nest because it was exactly mm-hmm. where I needed to go to like rest and recuperate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And,
you know, it was very Gilmore Girls.
It was very Gilmore Girls. Yeah. It was very, I mean, and I had the crazy landlord to like match it all. Mm-hmm. And it was perfect. And it's so fascinating mm-hmm. now because like I had that opposite experience of you, right? So you mm-hmm. stayed in the house and had to switch up your stuff. I left the house. I can't even imagine what it must be like for him, and he's still in the apartment as far as I know, where we lived together for 6 years, mm-hmm. which is not an insignificant amount of time. And I also don't have a lot of dreams or memories of being there, which is crazy because mm-hmm. I was in the first year of COVID there. Like, yeah, I was in lockdown there.
It was a lot.
Mm-hmm. And it was a great apartment and it served us very well. But I moved all my stuff out. Still, just my furniture. I mean, just my clothing and my bits and bobs took me 3 trips,
mm-hmm.
which is insane. But yep, that was my fresh start that landed me back.
So before we go today, generally speaking, just so that people can understand the other side of the story, what has since happened?
Nothing exciting.
Your fresh start.
So I reached out to a number of men who I knew would give me some attention post breakup. And I reached out to one who I had met when I was on vacation in Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. And I was on holiday here and I met him once for like 20 minutes and we became Facebook friends. And we sort of always stayed connected a little bit because he's cute. And he is cute. He's cute. He's going to be home any minute now. Mm-hmm. And he was very kind in my telling him what had happened. And we just started talking. And my crazy move was that 2 days after we started talking, he still lives in Edinburgh. He is from here. I booked a ticket to come see him for 2 weeks after 2 days of talking, which was mm-hmm. insane. It was insane. And I canceled it. I canceled it that night, that same night. And I came to see him 3 months later. And that sort of, it answered a lot of questions for me about what it's supposed to feel like. And I mean, a year later, we are still together and we're figuring out the international thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's very interesting to me because it is a much more aligned relationship at the moment. I mean, all things come in waves and I'm always anxious to talk too positively about anything, but it's much more aligned. You know, he got me where I was writing poetry again, and he edits my poetry, and it's a totally different kind of thing than what I had.
Well, you've come into yourself a lot over the last couple of years.
Because at 34, when entering a relationship, you know yourself very differently at 23 when entering a relationship. Mm-hmm. So there's almost, it's an unfair comparison to make, right?
Yeah.
Because I get to be, I also, the thing that I loved is that I spent so many years between 23 and 33, you develop and break so many bad habits. Yeah. And I had to say to my ex every time, I know you think I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to freak out about this thing, but I'm not, because I haven't been 27 in 6 years. And I'm different now. It was so nice to start fresh with somebody where I'd be like, I'm not going to do this thing. And he'd be like, right. Why? I've never seen you do that. You've never done that thing. I'm like, oh, I can just start with better habits and better, you know, like relationship skills. And that was really exciting.
And our bodies change from 22 to 32, 33. Mm-hmm. You know, for myself, I'm very excited to meet somebody that doesn't keep saying, remember when you looked like this at 22?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's a big part of something we don't talk about too with relationships is your partner has to accept that your body is going to grow and change.
Yeah.
And many different
100%.
Ways.
And so it's just very different, and it's pretty exciting and it's pretty great. And I am excited for him. He'll be home in about 40 minutes from work, and I'm excited to see him, even though I just saw him this morning. And it's been a real fresh start. Like I said, I thought the fresh start was moving into that house and buying all that furniture and being back on Long Island. And I was really open and surrendered to the pursuit of joy, fulfilling my two rules, which are pursuing joy and being safe. And as long as you were doing those two things, there are no rules. And I felt like, oh my God, I'm such a bad girl. I'm breaking the rules. I'm supposed to be a nice little Jewish girl from Long Island who gets married and does her nice thing and has babies. Who goes and flies to another country to meet a man she met for 20 minutes 11 years ago, who's 10 years older than her and, you know, lives internationally? I'm breaking all the rules. And the truth is there are no rules. The only things you have to abide by are that you are safe and you are somehow in the pursuit of joy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the, those are my credentials for this situation.
Well, that makes sense. And we're all for that here at Fresh Starts.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad, because it's this company I started with you. So I'm glad that I aligned with the values.
Good thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for sharing all that.
Well, thank you for listening to my story today. We're always here and we're always proud of you. Until next time, Braveheart.
A Fresh Story is brought to you by Fresh Starts Registry, the first and only platform for everything you need to start again. You can read the show notes and learn more about today's episode on freshstartsregistry.com/podcast.